I suggest that if you have an opportunity sometime today to share your deepest longing with someone close to you or nearby, someone who will listen to you. Well, this is the first time in 10 years that I've started a little differently, and those who heard me 10 years ago might remember what I used to say every time. I'm going to say something different now. It's the motto of the Bioneers Conference that's put on every year somewhere in the, usually California, I believe. My brother and I have told each other that we would go together one day, but we haven't yet managed to. I'm looking at him in the front row. Their motto is, it's all alive, it's all intelligent, it's all connected. And as a motto, I think that's a lovely theme for what I'm about to say today. I'm just going to take a small moment here to basically look at each of you in the face and let you know that I'm present here with you in one way or another. Okay. Well, today I'm going to talk about the singularity of our lives, our human lives, and their meaning. And I'm going to place it in this context of a cosmic theme in the background. Now, just let me ask you, because this is something that I come back to as a longing myself from time to time and in different circumstances. Have you ever had any difficulty being heard by someone? Being heard by a spouse? Having your political view heard? Having your beliefs listened to? Have you ever had any difficulty with that? Has it ever seemed that no one can really get what your conscious experience has actually been about? Has anyone ever really got you? And has it ever seemed difficult to feel really at home with someone else, with your living situation, or even with yourself, or with those that you love? Do we live lives of, I'm not sure whether it's a song or a poem, but the famous phrase, lives of quiet desperation? I think occasionally some of us do feel that feeling. A man called Abert Johnny said, human beings, in a sense, may be thought of as multidimensional creatures composed of such poetic considerations as the individual need for self-realization, subdued passions for overwhelming beauty, and a hunger for meaning beyond the mere flavors that enter and exit the physical body. I actually believe that many of us have an incredible longing to have the sense of coming home, home at last, and coming home again and again, home to our own true hearts. But not just alone, but in the company of others, in the meeting place, whether with partners, friends, family, or colleagues. For some reason, I can't explain, since I was 7 years old, and over all the years since, I won't tell you how many, because I'm a little bit vain. I've wondered what it would be like to experience the life of another person. There was a girl in my class, grade one, who was the smartest person in the class, and I spent, I don't know how many weeks, trying to imagine what it would be like to be inside her head. But this has led to moments in my life, wonderful moments, that are extended glimpses of vast and deep contact with others. And this has led me into inquiry into the nature of human consciousness and how the cosmos itself is becoming self-aware. Perhaps that was also because, as a little boy, I always was staring at the night sky, at the stars, and having this sense I could not put my finger on, but always felt like somewhere home was there as well as where I was standing. Later in life, one of my heroes became a man from the, I guess it's at least 300 or 400 years now, a man called Giordano Bruno, who wrote material about possible worlds. And when my wife and I visited Rome a couple of years ago, it was my great pleasure that we came across a beautiful square that's not on the usual tourist trek called Campo di Fiori. And in the middle of that square is a statue of Giordano Bruno, who was burned at the stake on that spot. I believe it was in 1600, but I'm guessing here. And it was because he was willing to stand up for his beliefs that the Inquisition had him done in. So he's been an inspiration to me. Now, it was mentioned in my bio that I used to be an atheist. I'm not an atheist anymore. But what I am, I don't think I can put into words easily. But you may get some sense of that by the time that I'm finished here. I hated the authority of other people telling me what I should believe and what I should think. I think that probably resonates through a lot of Unitarians. Don't tell me what I should believe. I feel so strongly about that. I think that's one of the causes of the strife that humanity is in, is the assumption by some people that they should be able to tell others what to believe. Science was my way to escape the difficulties of being in my family at home, before my brother arrived, of course. So I became a budding scientist, and hence at some point a budding atheist. And I eventually started to look at what were the assumptions underlying the scientific method and how science worked, and what was the worldview of science. And I found many things that were left alone, assumptions that are made that were never questioned or hardly ever questioned. And if they were questions, it was by people who were in woo-woo land. But I think the evidence has come in many different ways that that's no longer a valid position to take. That is, that somehow there is a world out there that's only discoverable by the human mind and our sciences. And while our sciences are very effective at discovering many things, they're not effective at discovering everything. Some of you may be aware that the remnants of supernovas, stars that have exploded in an incredibly enormous way, that remnants of those explosions, those nuclear explosions, have become the complex elements that have gone into making a human being and other creatures as complex as ours. That without that happening, there would be no such thing as a human being. There would be no such thing as intelligent life. So how can we cut ourselves off from this stardust, these remnants of the supernova? And how can we cut them off from our own history, our own evolution? Some of you may be aware that of the vast number of biological and even geological lives that have undergone a process of evolution to co-create complex creatures like elephants, horses, orcas, and ourselves, all having self-consciousness of some kind. Brian Swim, in his book, The Universe Story, says, "The capacity within human awareness to hear and respond to the spontaneities of the universe was deeply appreciated by primal peoples of every continent. Their mode of living was a life in resonant participation with the rhythms of reality. We using song and dance. And I believe there's a compelling argument that all of our sensual perception and understanding of the universe must be grounded, in the end, not just by the processing of our brains, our neurophysiology, but from the very universe itself. Brian Swim has a beautiful way of putting this, and I'm going to quote again from his book. I don't know how many of you have the chance to see the Milky Way in the summertime. It's actually quite visible and easy to see if you stay up late enough, and you're away from the city lights as well. He says, "Tonight on every continent, human beings will look into the edge of the Milky Way, that band of stars encircling our sky, which we now understand as a galaxy. Formed by the seemingly insignificant ripples in the birth of the universe, it has been activating stars and solar systems within it for 10 billion years. When we stare at it, we are staring at our own generative matrix. As new ripples in the fabric of space-time, we humans ponder those primal ripples that called us into being." Our human responsibility as one voice among so many throughout the universe is to develop our capacities to listen and witness as profoundly as our ancestors did. The adventure of the universe depends upon our capacity to listen. Humans will watch the Milky Way galaxy not only with eyes, but with radio telescopes and satellites tonight. And after such long centuries of inquiry, we find that the universe developed over or close to 15 billion years ago, and that the eye that searches the Milky Way, our eyes searching the Milky Way, are themselves eyes shaped by the Milky Way. And so he concludes, and I agree with him, that the mind that searches for contact with Milky Way is the very mind of the Milky Way galaxy in search of its own inner depths. If that's so, and I'm just asking you to perhaps go along with some of the leaps and jumps I'm making here, just to try them out, try them on for size. I'm not asking you to believe what I'm saying here, but it's my experience and what I've come to understand. Each of us sentient beings is an eye of a many-faceted cosmos beginning to become self-aware. But are these eyes independent of each other? Are our lives completely independent and private from each other? From the vast reaches of the cosmos to the infinitesimally small aspects of the material world, quantum discoveries of the past century have emphasized how completely connected the physical world actually is. There's a Canadian philosopher called Stephen Jenkinson. He specializes in the process of grieving. And he emphasizes the notion that monotheism, you know, this cleavage between the trio of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, who have a single God, is so much superior to the polytheistic traditions of other cultures, such as the Hindu, for example. He says that the strength of their position has been so strong, it's influenced our thinking in many ways that we don't even notice. One of which is that there is a single external reality, a single real world out there. And it's natural for there to be one authority to interpret what that is. And that there's only one highly evolved species on the planet, and we need authority to determine whether people are right and wrong. I for one, have now questioned that hold of monotheism on me, and have put it in the same category as imposed belief. And today I'm going to suggest to you that each of your conscious lives, each of the lives that you are living, Each of those is a universe of its own. This is the hidden multiverse I'm going to be talking about. Not directly the one that physics and cosmology is exploring today, but the one that's in each and every one of us. Thank you. Did you hear any of that back there? Sorry about that. Our sound system is tricky today. There are some aspects of modern science that can be taken as making an individual's life meaningless. For instance, that we are only the result of random mutations of our DNA. That random events and circumstances and probabilities determine the outcomes of our lives. That our lives are small, very tiny statistical contributions to the overall evolution of the species. I challenge that. I'm suggesting that rather than being a pale, incomplete, and often erroneous interpretation of some singular reality, that each sensual life lived by you and other sentient beings has an integrity of its own, as a unique universe. And moreover, that no life or sentient universe has more importance than any other. Okay. Now, why does this notion of a universe come up? A multiverse come up. Why spend any time thinking about, isn't the universe all it is? So why call it a multiverse? Well, in part, this has come up because of the bizarre behavior of the quantum world and our difficulty in coming to terms with how it actually works. One of the theories that came up in the late 50s, perhaps early 60s, was one by a man called Hugh Everett, called the many worlds interpretation of what happens when we take a quantum measurement. And that is that somehow the universe splits at that point into as many possibilities as are available, and that it keeps splitting and splitting and splitting as we make decisions. And when I read about that, I thought, that's totally bizarre. That couldn't be. And actually, I still believe that, because I think it was just formulated in the wrong way, but that's another story. Nonetheless, it's trying to understand quantum physics that there's this interest in the multiverse. And I would say there's another reason, one that I won't spend too much time on, but I have in earlier talks, and that is that reality may not be like a billiard table where we're having billiard balls as particles bouncing on and off each other, and we're fascinated with Higgs particles and particle this and particle that. I'm saying that there's another kind of world possible that fits into this situation. One that is emergent in every moment, and one that isn't made of particles but of relationships, vast, complex relationships that the quantum world is starting to understand. And there are a rich variety of multiverses that science is looking at, and I won't go into all of these, but a number of different categories by a man called Tegmark and another man called Brian Green. But what I would like to do is to read to you a fine description of a multiverse that was written by my favorite science fiction author from the 1930s, a man by the name of Olaf Stapledon. In his novel, The Star Maker, published in 1937, he said the following: "In one inconceivably complex cosmos, where whenever a creature was faced with several possible courses of action, it took them all, thereby creating many distinct temporal dimensions and distinct histories of the cosmos. Since in every evolutionary sequence of the cosmos there were very many creatures, and each was constantly faced with many possible courses, and the combinations of all their courses were innumerable, an infinity of distinct universes branched from every moment of every temporal sequence in this cosmos. I don't think that you ever read Stapleton, but Stapleton certainly nailed it. But there's a simpler description of a multiverse. This is taken from a book by Paul Macaulay. The multiverse, she said, was like an old library whose shelves were packed with books arranged by a cataloging system that ranked them according to similarity, each book containing within its covers a story that only varied slightly from the stories of its immediate neighbors, but by increasing degrees from those of books increasingly distant away. More recently, some scientists at Griffith University in Queensland, Australia, have come up with a notion of interacting parallel universes and have established a framework of thinking that could show how that would explain some of the most bizarre aspects of quantum theory. But really, what I want to speak about in the minutes I have remaining, the hidden multiverse, I don't think is really hidden at all. I just think it appears to be hidden. And that is the universes that each of us experience throughout our lives, that they actually are shareable. They're shareable with some difficulty. It's not easy, I think, for one conscious aware being to experience that which another one experiences. But it's this that is the multiverse that I'm curious about. And I'm wondering whether or not it isn't an important step in evolution. When people speak about contacting extraterrestrial intelligence throughout the cosmos, they almost always talk in technological terms. And they think about advanced civilizations as being ones that are advanced technologically. For some reason, they don't look at the possibility of being more advanced consciously. That there might be some ways in which our consciousness could grow and enlarge and get greater. Now, I'll come back to that a little bit later. But I just want to say something about why I believe this contact consciousness to consciousness is so important. First of all, it's kind of hard to believe. And why, as a seven-year-old, I was interested in it, I have no idea. But in my life, I've had the good fortune that under particular circumstances, I've been able to have a glimpse of this. Sometimes just the merest glimpse. Sometimes a glimpse that would last for a half an hour. And I'm not talking about physical intimacy here. I'm talking about mind to mind. I'm talking about non-physical connection between us. There's something called entanglement that's very popular in the world of physics, especially in the last two decades, because it seems to excite people who have read a lot of science fiction, like most scientists have. Called entanglement. And entanglement is about the direct connection without space and time between particles that were, in effect, born together. And I'm saying there's an analog at our human level and that it's possible for this to happen. And I've had enough glimpses of this that I'm convinced inside that it is not only possible, but it's where our future may lie. That our ability to accept each other as beautiful, boundless beings that can be received as such with some difficulty, and at least contemplated as such, and that that possibility itself should say something about how we can behave with each other and how we can create societies that would work better than what we have at the moment. It's difficult for these glimpses originally for me to experience them, because they were the end result of a great deal of opening up, tossing away tired beliefs, tossing away expectations, tossing away judgments about other people and other things and about the way the world was. It's a long, and originally this is very long and hard to do. I'm mindful of my time here, so I'm going to skip over some descriptions of it. And the reason that this kind of contact, this kind of deep contact between two consciousness or more, which interesting enough now is a television series developed by Netflix. I can say something about that later. The reason it's so difficult is because it's a form of surrender, a surrender to what actually is. And it's especially difficult when the others we're with remain largely closed. It is only, in my experience, reached by a vast openness, vast possibility, and vast spaciousness. When I first experienced this, it was so vast and profound that I knew that I would crawl across a continent on my belly in order to receive its blessing. I do believe that these kind of soul linkages is at the heart, or at least directly derived from, what quantum entanglement is all about. Again, let me speak, quote Brian Swim, and then a famous Buddhist by Thich Nhat Hanh. To be is to be related, for relationship is the essence of existence. Alienation for a particle is a theoretical impossibility. For galaxies too, relationships are the fact of existence. Nothing is itself without everything else. And that is the concept in Africa, that I am because thou art. Thich Nhat Hanh expressed this in a poem called The Old Mendicant. Being rock, being gas, being mist, being mind, being the mesons traveling among galaxies at the speed of light, you have come here, my beloved. You have manifested yourself as trees, grass, butterflies, single-celled beings, and as chrysanthemums. But the eyes with which you looked at me this morning tell me that you have never died. Well, time doesn't permit, but I would suggest that there are ways to encourage this more in our everyday personal lives. It's something I'm attempting to do. It's not easy, but when I see that there is some reward, I'm encouraged. When the Buddha, when Gautama woke up from underneath the Bodhi tree, one of the things he tried to say was that all aspects of our world and all factors of our lives subsist in a dynamic web of interdependence. What we have is the seventh principle in the Unitarian. But those currents of relationships are not visible to the physical eye. We look like separate projects walking around in separate bodies. I've been struck for a long time now by the way in which our social and physical systems, our religions, and even our science have impoverished individual lives and meaning in the world. In order to receive the good life of material progress, it seems that we have allowed our integrity and wholeness to be diminished, and that we have enabled our perceptions, our consciousness, and human values to be co-opted and colonized by the entertaining spectacles around us and the commercial imperative. As a result, the quality of our relationships with ourselves and with others in the biosphere and with the very planet have suffered immensely. But to the degree that I'm able to accept the richness and the openness of other human beings that's potentially within them, by the degree to which I can accept the possibility of this hidden multiverse, I believe there's new hope for the future. As difficult as it often seems, especially with our all-too-human habits and patterns, the open-ended intimacy of treating each other as beautiful, boundless beings is inspiring for me. It leads to such values as each life lived is as important as any other, that no aspect of the cosmos is privileged above any other, that no one has the right to impose a belief in words and action upon others, that each sentient being has a personal sovereignty that I can respect, and by so doing, nourish my own sovereignty. By treating my close ones as boundless beings, as much as possible, I am truly nourishing the cosmos, no matter how little my progress in this quest seems. By truly listening as deeply as I can, and by really being heard, it enables me to welcome that deep sentiment of finally coming home over and over again, coming home to the place where we can all truly meet. And does this not lead to a joyous cosmology? So what does this presentation mean for SETI, the search for intelligent life in the universe that was mentioned in the opening words? Just considering the number of planets in the galaxy that potentially can hold intelligent life, some will be a lot older than our civilizations here. But almost all the thinking, as I said before, was technological. If we focus on what they might really have done to advance, it may be entirely in the realm of consciousness or something that we may not have even imagined yet. In going back to Olaf Stapledon again, in his talk on interplanetary man in 1948 to the British Interplanetary Society, he said, "If by one means or another man does succeed in communicating with intelligent races in remote worlds, then the right aim will be to enter into mutual understanding and appreciation with them, for mutual enrichment and the further expression of the spirit. One can imagine some sort of cosmic community of worlds." Can this opening up to the universe of the other that I've been talking about, from one-to-one personal consciousness, can it reveal the joy of co-creation in a widening consciousness and in a vast mystery of never-ending worlds? First with our own human species, then with the biosphere of the planet, and out into the galaxy around us? It's pretty hard to see that when human beings kill each other for beliefs. It's pretty hard to sense the potential of that when we treat other sentient beings so disgracefully. For me, elephants come to mind. It's hard to see when we diminish and demean lesser, less complicated forms of life in the biosphere. It's hard to see us being prepared for SETI. So, with that thought, let it be a dance.